4 Romeo Delta Echo, radio check.
DB2BNG, I hear you. Sounds good.
DB2, I think. Appreciate it. Reinstalling this older unit into the mobile here with a new antenna. You're coming in loud and clear as well. Appreciate the radio check. 7-3's to you.
You're good. Enjoy your radio. Yeah, I'm going to do that myself, put a new antenna. But, all right, 7-3's, KD2BNG, clear.
Here is Greg. Got a few minutes. I'm about to pull up. Got to run into Home Depot here. Got some drain issues this AM. But trying to figure a good way to get, instead of running two radios, trying to figure a good way to run. I've got a business radio out in Oklahoma, and I'm running a Motorola 5350 and a Icon 5100.
Business radio, certainly you could put ham radio frequencies in there. I mean, obviously you can't do the reverse, but I have, you know, commercial VHF, UHF equipment I used to do that with. So that's one option, is program your business radio with your ham frequencies. The other option of using two radios in a vehicle, I've never liked the way that works. You always get, yet usually it's two different antennas you need for two different bands, so it gets complicated.
Yeah, copy that. I've actually got a an LMR antenna. You know how it is. Supposedly wide band covers the 440 and the 2 meter band, and then wide enough to get down to 400 and up to the one something or other. I don't know, like the Mars Cap stuff and the GMRS radios. But I'm more concerned about literally. I just mounted two radios in here and with an antenna switch and a. Basically, instead of running the switch, you know, one radio to multiple antennas, just multiple radios or blah, 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 you know what it is. One, multiple radios to one antenna instead of one radio to multiple antennas.
Switch in that fashion, I'm sure it's certainly possible. Switch multiple radios to one antenna and hope that antenna is wide enough to, that guy. Hope that one antenna is wide enough to do both.
Yeah, Roger. That there, it's been a point of contention for me. You know, I asked the guy, one of the guys that was setting these radios up out in Oklahoma. That's where my work is. I asked the guy that was setting them up out I've just honestly just never been a big fan of Motorola. I don't know why. I mean, they're great radios, I suppose. And then, you know, for this business, my business partner decided to go with Motorola instead of ICOMs. And never been a big fan. I always thought the DMR stuff was too complicated. And even when you go analog on those business frequencies, even if you or analog on a business frequency on the Motorola's, it's a 2.5 step, and obviously the lowest we go on the ham bands, or tuning step, that is 5.0.
Motorola radios, because I spent some brief time at Motorola. Motorola radios are funny. Motorola might have basically a dozen of the same model tailored towards slightly different markets. And that's why a lot of them, for the ham bands, you might as well leave alone, because you'll see things like really strange splits or offsets. You'll see, like, a band that, not generally useful for ham radio, and you can't really expand it beyond that. So Motorola radios, you got to be careful with, because... this radio was designed for this one government service where it starts, it's like 406 to 420 megahertz with like a 6 megahertz split or some weird thing like that, and you can't change it. Plus, the programming equipment for Motorola radios is hard to come by.
Yeah, roger that. Honestly, it was a bear of a time just to get, just communicate. And this is no kidding. I could have set up, and I didn't want to make all my guys go out and either get a GMRS license or a ham license just to work and tie up, you know, ham bands or GMRS bands. And then the solutions that I did like were that, you know, they could run a combination of LTE, RF and this IDAS or something from ICOM, but then on the Motorola side there's this, I don't know, Moto Turbo or something, and then there's, you know, internet linking, and then there's also cell linking and all this kind of stuff. And I was just like, look, I just want something that when we're working locally I could do some simplex stuff, and then when we're working in a town or we're on storms and we can put up a temporary antenna, that we could run some repeater based stuff. But man, listening to the Motorola guys talk versus the ICOM guys, I was like, bro, they might as well have been explaining complicated math to me.
Well, let's see. FRS and GMRS frequencies you can use for general purpose. Yeah, ideally everyone needs a GMRS license to use the repeater frequencies. There's MERS frequencies you can use. There's only about four or five of them. Let's see, what can you use for general purpose radio? Those are basically it. GMRS license isn't expensive, really, but, you know, it's $80 or something for like 5 years or something. It depends how many people you need licensed. You know, other than that, you're looking at leased frequencies where you got to, you know, it gets expensive or it gets complicated.
KI4LZI Mobile. That's not half of it, as you're talking about Motorola and ICOM and all. When it comes to all these different digital modes, as you were saying, you got Moto Turbo, you got Nextgen, you got APCO 25, you got, D-Star, you got DMR, all kinds of this stuff, and unless you're up on to it, it's really something to try to straighten and figure out.
Yeah, and I understand that. I've got, you know, the ICOM radio. I've got ICOM and Yaesu. And I'll be honest with you, when I looked at all three of the major manufacturers, well, besides Kenwood, because they were just, that's just out of my price range. But I looked at ICOM, Yaesu, and Motorola, and I looked at Motorola first, and then I was like, it almost turned me off of radios completely. I was like, you got to be kidding me. And then I do some stuff on D-Star and C4FM with mobile hotspots and traveling, and then, you know, racking my brain on how to create a small little repeater at my house, kind of a, I don't know, how I can be on the road, come into a D-Star at the house and hit my local RF repeater and back and forth, just so I could stay in contact without having to use Echo Link. But those digital modes are complicated.
That knows how I see it, buddy. To be honest about it, I wish this digital stuff had never come about. What worries me, somewhere down the line, there's going to be some kind of a disaster. And with all these different digital modes, none of them being interoperable to speak of with one another, should we lose analog for some reason, we in the amateur community is going to be hurting too.
DMR is nearly better.
thing about that the other day. Even my PGF is I-73. That's all digital.
There's something static where you can
we'll still be able to get in contact or still be able to. There's not very many people A lot of them are doing the GMR mix, like the gentleman said earlier. But I'm thinking about putting up a GMRS repeater at the house as well, just local at my house.
Yeah, for a bit, but up here in Pickens County, there's a GMRS repeater on Caesar's Head, and there's one on Glass of Mountain outside of Pickens.
In some engineering magazine, and these engineers are saying, well, there's 12 competing standards, we should come up with one. And you see, you know, later on in the last panel of the comic, well, now there's 13 competing standards. What is it? DMR looks like the one that may emerge as more or less, but you know, who knows? There's too many now.
Caesar's Head and on Glass Mountain out of Pickens also. Up here in upstate, it's mostly DMR.
That's what, I don't say not concerns me, but if they would, one of the things about the digital modes or the hotspot, whether it's D-Star, C4, FM, some of the new hotspots will do cross mode. And, that's neat, but you're still relying on the internet. And I don't want to rely on the internet, to be honest with you, because when it goes down, that's one of the first things that's going.
You're the thing right there, I'm about depending on the internet. You're absolutely right. Go ahead, Glenn.
Or you're going to see, does anyone out there make a multi-mode radio that supports two or three digital modes? You know, it's like the market, sooner or later the marketplace is going to decide one way or the other. I mean, I think. Because there's how many digital standards now? In addition to the ones, let's see, there's APCO 25, there's one called NXT something. I could probably list six others. It's a mess. Which is probably an understatement.
We have analog, we're fine, but way they are with everything else about analog, one day we may lose it. You go ahead and go to the station and pick it up. KI4LZI Mobile.
No, I completely agree. You know, the more we wait or the less involved we are, and I'm a brand new ham. I've had my general now for 2 years or so, and I'm worried they're going to start narrowing the bands. The FCC going to start, you know, cutting the bands, narrowing them off. But I mean, you got to honestly think that, you know, are they going to do that? There's so much equipment out there nowadays, that, and so many people. There's still a lot of people. Call them an Elmer if you want to, whatever. There's so much knowledge out there right now that I don't think it's really going to matter. As long as there's some RF equipment and you got a generator or a battery, I think you're going to have communications. We're always going to be smarter than the people telling us what we can and can't do. We're always going to be smart enough to figure that out.
What everybody's on. If you got some here on D-Star, some on DMR, some on APCO 25, some on NXT, and then there ain't none that's interoperable with one another. I've heard that maybe there's two that they're working on that might be interoperable. Well, for the moment, that might be fine. We still got analog, but somewhere down the line, due to the bandwidth considerations that you said about cutting back on it. They're liable to take and make us go narrow, even with analog narrow band.
One of the things about with the DMR radios or the, and I don't even know what this radio is running, to be honest with you. I've got two analog stations programmed into it, and the rest of it's digital simplex, and it's the worst sounding radio. It's supposed to be a business. Now, don't get me wrong, it's loud, but it the 12 kilohertz bandwidth on the voice or the packets or whatever, I don't even know what it is, but it sounds like the person you're talking to is half drunk and sounds like Donald Duck most of the time.
What, that back in the 60s when single sideband first come out, they called single sideband AMers did.
It can actually be a mess. I'm gonna have to. I've shown up at my destination here. I'm gonna run in here and pick up a couple things from the Home Depot, and I'll catch y'all back here shortly. This is KN4RDE.
What exactly happened to Al that took Al out, Glenn? Can you tell me?
Say again?
So the automobile Friday, exactly what happened to Al? I heard that sure enough he did pass away. What happened to him?
Well, his heart and lungs and, you know he had heart problems and lung problems, kind of like me, kind of like all of us. Last I saw him might have been in September or October. He was in hospital and had already been there for about 2 weeks. And then I didn't see him for after that. He was supposed to go from there to some rehab center, you know, to like learn how to get his muscle tone back. And I don't know when he passed. Sometime in December, I'm thinking. I don't really know. But, you know, it could have been early December, could have been later. I wasn't in contact with him recently, so I couldn't tell you.
I heard someone come on the net here and talk about he had passed away, then I heard a little bit later that some others had some of his gear. I knew about he had the lung issues. I didn't know about the heart issues, though.
Had both. One, you know, the one usually accompanies the other. Yeah, he still has a bunch of my gear. You know, there's a computer I might eventually want to get back. And I think there's probably my Drake R8. But, yeah, at this point, you know, Crystal probably already got rid of it all. I imagine the body wasn't cold when Crystal came through there and took everything and threw it away. Because, you know, those two hated each other.
Well, I could ask that myself. I was just one since I heard you in here. KI4LZI Mobile.
KI4LZI, KD2BNG. And I don't know where I'm going, but I think I'm there. Oh, yeah, there it is. All right, you have a good one.
N4DKC.
Not bad. Just out and about. How about yourself?
Today, it's a little cool outside this morning, but it's been clear the last couple of days. Hope it warms up a little bit tomorrow afternoon when I get out and do a few things.
Next week or two, I think. Okay, so this is downtown Greer, so that means I'm where exactly? I guess that means I'm exploring.
Located in Anderson near I-85. It's a little stretch for me to hit the repeater on 10 watts, but I've got a little small 5 element beam up.
Repeater easily enough on 10 watts. This is 25 watts or 65 watts. I don't know if I can go down to 10 watts. Yeah, but I've done it on 10 watts. I've probably done it on 5 watts with the right antenna.
The hall for us here, I'm standing at lake level. So I'm not very, I don't have much elevation. Also, my antenna's inside rather than outside. I can use it on 5 watts pretty easily, even 2 watts. The conditions are good. But, yeah, I've got a little thing. I'm only about 700 feet, so lake is at 660 right now, so I'm only about 40 feet or so above lake level. I'm just not high enough up on a hill, but it works okay for me there. I've got another rig. I've got another ICOM rig I run sometimes. This is a regular mobile rig. It's 65 watts, I think. I usually run it about 25. I think it's got a 10 watt. Either 10 or 25 or 65, I think.
Car now is Kenwood TM-281. So I think I've only got 25 watts or 65 watts. 65 watts being a bit ridiculous for most things. Plus, I'd have to go directly to the battery. I couldn't get that off the cigarette lighter. I had another one I used to run, another Kenwood that had those a dual bander that had like those 5 and 10 and 50 watt positions. Maybe I'll put that one back in the car, but there isn't a whole lot going on in 70 centimeters.
No, but when I used a couple of dual band Kenwoods, and I only ran those at low power when I was working satellite stuff on them, because I don't run more than about 5 or 10 watts on that. I'd run 10 on the uplink on some of those on 70 centimeters, but I always had a little, the Kenwoods don't do it, the Yaesus, they have it feels like a relay is clicking in a Yaesu, Geoband or some of the newer ones, and I didn't like that, but I like the Kenwoods, and I like the ICOMs too, because I run a split band on, this is a 705, this is only a 10 watt radio, it's all band, all mode. So I can use it, I can split it up and use like a 2 meter uplink for space station and then tune the downlink on using a waterfall display or even use satellite controller if I wanted to, but I generally do this. Those satellites aren't that complicated to follow like the single sideband versions are.
Anything with satellite, I suppose I could build some sort of mount that'll track the satellite, which wouldn't be that hard to build. I suppose they also have them out there already built for you. But that's actually the sort of thing I'd rather try to build myself, is some sort of satellite controller.
People do that. You can get, I think it's 500. It's got the, tracks it, and but you're talking about a lot of money when you do it. I think a couple of guys built them using Raspberry Pis and that sort of thing, but it's still pretty complicated. They're not that difficult to follow anyway. You just got to be, especially the space station, it runs 10 watts. It's pretty easy. You don't have to be. I can hit it off the back of mine. I've got a little handheld beam. Mine mounted on a tripod though outside. When I go outside to work them. So I can usually get in on 5 watts pretty easily, but you just got to kind of be in the general direction of them. Biggest thing with them is just all the QRM, all the other stations getting in since the FM ones are just basically repeaters, you have to capture that signal. But it's not that difficult to hit, and it helps a little bit on it to have a gain type antenna on the 436, 437 portion, but otherwise it doesn't require a lot of equipment other than you can build an antenna yourself pretty easily. Some people run 2 radios, but I find this way you just run 1, even though this one only runs half duplex, it's not full duplex like the 9700 and the Kenwoods run full duplex, and some of the ICOM dual banders as well. They just don't track, Yeah, yeah, you can only move in five increments. You really need to be able to get it down to one to track it properly. That way, you won't be missing the downlink, because it does shift that much on 2 meters on the 2 meter part of the band up on downlink. It does in the 436, 437. It shifts pretty fast.
Well, how much frequency shift is there? More than 5 kilohertz? Now, for low-orbiting satellites, I suppose there might be. But, yeah, you know, as for antennas, I've seen videos of someone working a satellite using a handheld antenna and, you know, some sort of portable radio. You know, just... take your antenna and just point it at the satellite just by hand. It'll, if it's an FM satellite as opposed to single sideband or whatever, you know, you can, the frequency shift isn't that much. Yeah, you can do it. I can do it with a handheld antenna.
Need a little bit of a directional antenna, especially on, since all of them are dual band. You really need a handheld beam, kind of like an elk or an arrow. Fully that way you can get the deep lecture built in. You can get the deep lecture built in the antenna. So you only have to have two radios, so don't have to have off antenna deep lecture built into the handle. It's pretty simple. And for instance, if the space station is passing overhead, it usually starts at about, the center frequency is about 800, and I think it's 437, 800, and it usually, when it pops up over the rise, you'll usually hear it about 810, 811, somewhere there, and it moves all the way down to 790, and most people just use five as the increment as it pops, you know, as it starts moving. It's a lot easier if you use one, you know, if you got a radio that tune in one, because it's just easier to you know, lock in on that signal, especially if the satellite is, 2 meters up and 70 down. If it's vice versa, it's even more difficult because the Doppler's a lot more prevalent on the 70 centimeter part of the band. And, higher elevation satellites, as they go over, like if you're, especially if you're hitting like a 25 or 30 degree pass, it's fast overhead, it just moves over so fast, and plus the footprint of the satellite is so shallow, you don't really get to any, you might work into, for instance, I can work into, I get a lot, if it's a 90 degree pass, 80 degree pass, I can get into, Florida and, Alabama, Georgia, Virginia sometimes, and sometimes I can move out to Texas, but on a low pass, I can work out into Arizona, North Dakota, South Dakota, Texas pretty easily, a couple of Mexican stations, and there's a guy in Ecuador I get every once in a while as well, and I can get up into New York State pretty well, Canada, some Canadian stations. You can't work all states on it, but you can hit, I think I got about 15 states so far, something like that. And all that's running 5 watts.
Didn't really know you could. All right, yeah, that makes sense. The lower it is in the sky, the lower the angle, the further away it's going to send the signal. I didn't think you'd get as far as, let's say, where'd you say, New York or California or one of the, but yeah, I suppose you could. As I said, it's a mode I really know nothing about that I've never worked, but to build all the antennas wouldn't be all that hard. To build a nice tracking antenna would be, you'd get a bit more involved, but, you know, I'll try it one time. That's one of my antenna projects to do later, which I guess to do later usually means probably doesn't get done, but one day soon.
I know all about that. The more complex the antenna system, you don't need a lot of As a matter of fact, they don't like for you to run a lot of power on satellites because it you don't need it actually. The only ones where you need to run a little bit of power on are some of the higher altitude satellites, like the RS-44, the Russian satellites. You can work into Europe on those. But those satellites have a much wider bandwidth, and it's not just a repeater, but it's a linear satellite. So you got a portion you can work different portions of the downlink, and you don't have to necessarily capture the repeater signal like you do with an FM satellite. And with AO-27, which is a really good satellite, it's just not powered on that often. It's only got about a 3-minute on cycle because the battery's not good. But you can actually work. You know, I use that one to work in Arizona and the Dakotas, up into Canada. But I can do the same on the space station. If you got a really good antenna system, you've got a clear view of the horizon, you can start working it before it pops up over the horizon a lot of times. That you can, the better antenna systems and controllers actually, they control the radio and the antenna, so the antenna tracks and the computer control moves the antennas as the satellite crosses the sky, and also there's a radio to shift Doppler on transmit and receive. So it can be pretty complex. It doesn't have to be, but it's like any other thing. You can go as far down that rabbit hole as your pocketbook allows.
And stations as far away as Europe on one of the higher orbiting satellites, I would imagine.
I don't get into the side bandwidth, although I can operate. It's a lot more complicated, and I just stick to the FM ones and the APRS satellites. See, there's only basically the APRS is the only one that's basically 100% operational now. Is one on the International Space Station. They do a month of voice repeater, and then they do a month of APRS. And I do that. I use handheld APRS on that. That's basically the only thing I'm doing. And some of the AO-27 when it's operational, and which it's FM, but you can also use D-Star on it as well, which is the instrument. It was an old satellite. It was originally designed to handle D-Star mode, and not a lot of people use it because it is. You have to have a pretty good signal in order to do it. I got a guy that I work in Arizona occasionally. We'll set up something on D-Star, and we'll work through D-Star just every once in a while. But the conditions, you have to be clear. You have to have a good band, good clear, with any QRM, basically, and a good pass, about 20 degrees out in the clear.
And because of the Doppler shift, I imagine it's going to be nasty. I mean, sideband sounds really bad when it's off-tuned even a little bit. I know most of the satellites are FM. I guess there are a few that are, well, let's see. The shuttle has, the ISS has a digital, a digipeater somewhere. It might also have regular, an FM uplink and downlink. What the other satellites have, I don't really know. As I said, it's an area I haven't really explored.
The space station has FM up and FM down. It's a split band where it's 2 meters up, 70 down. And it also has a digipeater, APRS digipeter that runs, it's 145.825 up and down. And it has to be in order. It's pretty easy. It runs about 10 watts. It's pretty easy to work. You can hear it on a handheld on a rubber duck. And some people work it like that, but it has to be. You have to have a pretty clear view of it because the one thing about the space station is not tumbling like some of the satellites are. You have to deal with some satellites. You have to deal with antennas only putting out a quarter watt and or even a watt. And they're tumbling, and like on the Russian satellites, the RS-44, the linear sideband, some people use CW as well. It's also inverted, too, so you may have an upper sideband going up and a lower sideband coming down or vice versa. So it can be real involved and pretty confusing unless you have some type of computer control for your rig.
Let's see. The computer has to adjust azimuth and elevation. It probably also has to adjust topwash shift. And it might have to move around the antenna polarity. The satellite is tumbling. So you need, I guess, 3 degrees of freedom. It's got to go azimuth, elevation, and it's got to twist, I guess, for the polarity of the signal. And still, I'd like to try to make one. It'd be an interesting project.
The polarity is one thing, too. That's one of the reasons I use is basically like a handheld antenna, because I can mount it on a camera tripod, just twist it as it passes over. You generally don't have to do that on 2 meters, even for the ones that tumble. They're just going to be, they're going to be in and out. So you got to be fast. It's just basically call sign and grid square, and that's it. And people use recorders, so you can record it to be sure you got it. That sort of thing. It's just a fast. It's just like a meteor scatter beam band open where you get maybe about 15 seconds, and that's 15-20 seconds, and that's it. But it's kind of it's challenging, but it's a lot of fun. But the reason I use the handheld type antenna, even though I use it with a tripod, is because you can twist it as it goes. And if they're light enough, I don't handhold mine because a lot of times I use a base type radio. Like just 705 is a QRP type radio, but it's still not a handheld. And I use a little bit bigger radio than a handheld for that. But that way you can just hold it in your hand and twist it, and you don't have to write anything down. You got it recorded, and you got it that way too. It's just a more simplified way of doing it. But the more complex systems, the more the serious guys use something like a MT Leo pack, and it's got the 2 meter set up for either polarity. You can switch it. And, it's just cross elements. Same thing with the 70 centimeter part of it. And you don't have to mount those very high. You just got to have a good view of the rise. And generally people mount them on a short tower. And then you got those things the antenna's about $600. You got to run something like LMR 800 out to your radio, because otherwise the loss is so much you got to minimize the loss at that high frequency. And then the controllers are usually about $800 for the antenna controller, and the rotor, and then the software is not that expensive. It's involved. You got to be serious about it to do that kind of work, because it's a lot simpler. I just make it simple and cheap. And I get plenty of enjoyment out of it. But you can, like I said, you can go as deep or as shallow as you want to. Dave 4DJW had his one set up with where it tracked all the time, and he actually had the radios mounted at the antenna, I think, if I'm not wrong. I don't think he's got his operating now, but they could track it, and it tracked all the time. It did a 720 twist around, and it was a pretty unique thing. Based on his description of this, if you're adept at doing the stuff with Raspberry Pis and controllers, that sort of thing, it's pretty easy to build one up.
And I got so many Raspberry Pi boards or whatever sitting around, or Arduino boards, either way, you don't need that much processing power. I wonder if there'd be a market if anyone could come up with a cheap one that they could sell to other hams. Because $1,000 or so to get into this seems like a lot. Antennas are cheap to build. The motorized mount might be just about the most expensive thing to build. The controller board is cheap to build. So if they're getting that kind of money for some off-the-shelf solution, I think you could build them cheaper.
Well, these antennas, the antennas I'm talking about, they're pretty big. They're like, you know, 10 or 12 elements, and they're big antennas. They don't, you know, you can't move those around without having a heavy-duty controller, and they had to be rebuilt pretty often since they move a lot. There's a amateur club, I think it's in either New Zealand or Australia, that builds up those complete systems. And I think they're around $450. And you just, all you do is add your camera tripod and an arrow, you know, the dual band arrow, a satellite antenna, put it on there, and you can get out for, you know, maybe $600 or so. And it does. That includes the software, the controller for the, you know, the control for the radio, control the diaper, and also the one that does, plus the you know, the little mini rotor system to handle that small air antenna. The air antenna is not about 40 inches long, if that much. It's not a very big, weighs maybe a couple of pounds at most. And it works as good as anything does, to be frank with you. It's just not, like I said, it, you know, it's plenty good enough. And you don't really, if you don't mind standing outside and then having on a tripod just moving about every 30 seconds, so it's not a problem with that either. But yeah, there are a lot of designs out there to build them. The Hamset has designs out, and other people do too. There's been a lot of work done on that, where people build their own stuff. It's just getting the parts together, finding the parts, and finding the gears and all the stuff to move the antenna. That's probably the most difficult part, is finding all the stuff and getting it machined and fixed so it holds the antenna correctly and is strong enough and, you know, durable enough to last a period of time. But there are a lot of guys, I mean, I've seen a lot of home-built ones like that. It's just I don't have the inclination. I'm lazy, I guess. I may have the time, but I don't have the inclination and really don't have the expertise to do it.
Well, we all sound more ambitious than we really are. Well, I can build this, no problem, but when it comes to actually doing it, well, you know, another project that gets put on the shelf for another day. Until another day never gets there. Anyway, let me let you go. I got my first stop here. I got to do a few things. But it was nice talking to you. This is KD2BNG. I probably already forgot your call sign. But, you know, I'm sure we'll hear from you again.
We've talked before. It's been a while. But I hope you have a good afternoon. And good talking to you. And like I said, just take a look at it sometime. It doesn't have to be complicated. We hams and electronics, plus we tend to overcomplicate things. That's just standard procedure, I guess. But anyway, I hope you have a good day. Talk to you later. M4DJC clear.